Lineouts. Racks.
Halls engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles. Dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class.
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delcombe.
I'm Brendan Nell.
Brendan, we have a bumper show. Not that there are many guests, but there is one significant guest. I will leave it to you to introduce him later. And once that is done, we'll reflect very briefly on the Six Nations, which came to a conclusion last weekend, and then look ahead to the resumption of hostilities in the URC, certainly from a South African perspective.
Yeah, it's a big week and a big moving week because it's probably the tightest URC race out there with, I think, 15 teams that still can make the playoffs. But we'll get right into that. Let's first go quickly into our interview and we'll see you on the other side of this. Today's guest is somebody who's very well known in South African rugby circles. He started off his rugby career as a ball boy at Loftus, then moved up to technical advisor after school. Job with the Bulls and then became assistant coach there. Went on to be assistant coach of the Springboks as well. Moved abroad, has coached Munster and is now having a very successful stint at Bath. Welcome, Johan van Kroon. Welcome to The Last Drop.
Thanks, Brendan. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you, Liam. Always great to speak rugby and always great to speak rugby to our South African friends. So thanks very much.
And it's no coincidence, or no, it's not by accident that Johan's on the show this week. His team Bath won the Premiership Cup last weekend, a first trophy for the club in quite a while. Obviously, it's a club that is as deep roots. It's a historic club in England in the Premiership. Johan, so firstly, congratulations on that. I mean, but what was your sort of initial sentiments after that? Is it relief? Because as I said earlier, I mean, it's a club with real historical significance.
Oh, no, thanks, Liam. Look, an amazing rugby club, founded in 1865. So incredible history in not in only the English game, but the world game. I was approached to join this club and started here on the 11th of July, 2022. And, you know, the club was broken at that time. And I said to the board and to the staff and to the players, we're going to start on zero. We're going to respect our past because it's an amazing club. We've got a fantastic ground at the rec, but we're going to literally change everything. And so we did, and it's been a real people effort. And in the first year, we went from the start of the season last on the lock to qualifying for the Champions Cup. And last season, we improved again and played in the Premiership Final. For the first time in 9 years, and got to the knockout stages of Europe for the first time in 9 years, and we've improved as a group in the Premiership Cup, and it's really been such a squad effort, and got into the quarterfinal for the first time ever in this competition, and went on to the semi-final away, and got through that, and yeah, Sunday was a magnificent day for the club, beating Exeter 48-14 at Exeter. And the feeling is inner satisfaction in terms of the whole group. It's another step in our journey. It's not the end point. We as a group are absolutely loving what we're doing and trying to get better. And hopefully along the way, having some good rugby times and some good rugby memories.
At the start there, when you joined the club, and to suggest then that, you know, the club is broken is obviously quite ballsy. And I take it that the club was receptive to new ideas. I mean, so from the get-go, they empowered you to then make these changes. Was it I take it wasn't then a hard sell necessarily.
Oh, look, all credit to our owner, Bruce Craig, and the board, our chairman, Nick Varney, and CEO, Tarquin McDonald. They asked for a plan, and, you know, I presented the plan and they've backed the plan. I think the most important bit was you've got to aim to get somewhere, and we set out certain goals. We didn't put the time frame to it, and the non-negotiable to me was people. Appointed a whole new heads of department, a group of people, and then making the people that were here better. There were some fantastic people, and, you know, I'll give an example of the tight five that played in the Premiership final last year. Four of those tight five were here long before I came. So it's about investing in people, and the player group has been fantastic and very receptive. And we said year one, make sure we get aligned, understand how we want to play the game, create an identity. And the identity is tough to beat. You know, you won't win every game in the game of rugby, but you need to be competitive and you need to fight. As I always say, it's one of the last gladiator sports remaining. And then the support base in Bath is absolutely amazing. Supporters all over the world, no matter where we play, whether it be Leinster in Dublin or Toulouse in Toulouse, there's always Bath support. And it was no different on Sunday. There was such a big amount of the blue, black and white supporters. And look, the Rec is a fantastic place to play rugby at. So yeah, I've had all the support from everybody at the club. And it's not an I project, it's a we project. And as I said, you need to make sure you get people aligned, and the people have been fantastic.
Johan, I was going to say, just for our listeners who maybe don't know the Premiership Cup, just maybe explain where does that fit in an English season? It's also a cup final that was played without the internationals. Both you and Exeter didn't have your international players as well. So that must have made it a little bit more challenging, but that, I suppose, that speaks to the depth in the squad as well.
Yeah, Brendan, the best way I can explain it at this stage, obviously both England and South Africa play in the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup, which is the biggest competition that we both play in. And then you've got the URC and the equivalent in England is the Premiership. What a competition, what a privilege to be part of it. And I'd say the Prem Cup sits on the same level as the Currie Cup currently in South Africa. Obviously, it doesn't have the same history as the Currie Cup. I mean, the Currie Cup stays the special one with the Currie Cup trophy. But in terms of where the playing group sits, I'd say it's currently the same as the Currie Cup in South Africa. We used 49 players in this competition, young and old. Across the 49 players, our average age were 23. 11 players made their debuts, and most of them were 18 and 19-year-olds. Some senior players played towards the back end, with the likes of Ben O'Barner and Thomas Tutui, Miles Reid, Tom Dunn. But we kept the core of the group, the academy group of players, led by Ewan Richards, who's homegrown. And then, you know, the head coach was Andy Robinson, that I brought in after year one. Fantastic rugby man, rich history at Bath. I've been the coach here before. Coach three national teams, and that was led by the academy coaches. And then we all worked together in this very long season, as I'm sure everybody in South African rugby has seen. It kind of starts in the back end of August and goes till the middle of June. So you've got to make sure that you plan very well and use your resources. And yeah, as you say, our Six Nations players weren't available to play. They're actually all back in today. But this has been a real squad effort. 49 players played, and our squad is set up to be all about the group and all about inclusive. Doesn't matter if you're the oldest player that's 34, the youngest player that's 18 years old.
You mentioned Andy Robinson. He is, of course, a former England coach as well. And when people talk about him, they talk about this real tough man, this character. Doesn't necessarily say a lot, but he comes with this reputation. What's he like to work with?
Oh, incredible man. Obviously coached against him when I was involved with the Springboks, and he was with Scotland at the time. And I actually met him just when I started here at Bath, and I tried to find out as much about Bath as I could. And he had so many insights, and I saw somebody that's got a deep understanding about the game and somebody that loves the club. So it was important for me to bring in somebody like that's got a good understanding of what Bath have been like traditionally, but then also understand where we wanted to go. And he bought into what we are trying to do, and he's been absolutely fantastic. I put him in the tough to beat category. He was as a player and certainly as a coach, but he's got a very good way with players and with people around him. He's our oldest coach. So he's been there, done that. I mean, won the World Cup, coached three different nationalities, and he's fitted in really well. And he's helped our academy coaches and players so much.
I was going to say, I'm going to move on to a bit more personal now. I mean, you obviously were in Limerick before, not the place, not quite comparing to Pretoria's weather in terms of the sunshine there. Bath looks like a beautiful town to live in. And I mean, I know you've spoken about that before. How does it compare to Limerick, I suppose, in terms of just, you know, quality of life, family? I know you're a very big family man. Your kids are growing up there. How's all that going?
Yeah, Bryn, look, firstly, loved our time in Ireland. We stayed in a small little village called Castle Connell, which you've seen before. Thomond Park, one of the cathedrals of world rugby. So, you know, Munster will always be part of our history as a family. Our little girl was born there. So we had a great time in Ireland, loved our time there. But when we moved across, we said we'll make a fresh start at Bath and, you know, be part of the community. And the English people have been fantastic in terms of schooling, finding a church, being part of the community. It certainly rains a bit less than Limerick. I'd say it's a bit colder, but beautiful. I'd say the English countryside are pretty similar to the Irish countryside. We stay about 9 miles outside of Bath. We actually stay at Farley where we train. And yeah, we've had a brilliant time. I'd say a lifestyle pretty much the same. Yeah, people from the countryside, it's certainly not London. There's a very much family feel to Bath. I mean, the inner city of Bath is very beautiful, but if you get beneath that, people have got a real passion for rugby here, similar to Limerick. The supporters of the blue, black and white, they absolutely love the game. They're very proud of their team and their club, and you know, they've always supported the team through thick and thin. So, yeah, I can't speak highly enough of the English people and how they've welcomed us in. And look, Brennan, it's the reason I left South Africa was to become a better coach and to become a head coach. Was involved with the Springboks for 74 test matches. And, you know, it was such a privilege to be involved and absolutely loved my time. But, you know, you've got to try and get better and you live once in your life. And now, to be the head coach of Munster, loved that experience and loving what we're doing now. And I think wherever I go, you kind of see that 99.9% of people involved in rugby are good people. And life is about sharing memories and, you know, living it to the fullest. And I've been very fortunate enough to be surrounded by incredible people. And there's some great people at Bath.
I was going to ask you about how enriching you have found it, you know, leaving South Africa and then coaching abroad, the things that you've picked up along the way. You know, what are the significant things that you think that you believe that has made you a better coach? I mean, have you had to sort of, do you look at the game differently now as opposed to what, 6, 7 years ago?
Yeah, I think there's a few bits to this, Liam. I think firstly, language. I needed to speak a lot more English. I'd like to think my English have improved a bit. Culturally very different, trying to understand a different culture and making sure you fit in, understanding that at Munster it's not a South African club, it's an Irish club, and at Bath it's an English club, so, you know, making sure that you fit in with the culture. I've certainly learned a lot about the game, learned a lot about Northern Hemisphere conditions, how to play into the wind, how to handle wet weather. Obviously, Pretoria is very different. You get one game a year. Use the Bull Stormers game as an example where you get a lot of rain. Certainly working with different types of players. Some amazing players at Munster, Peter Romani, Harry Tyke-Byrne, somebody like CJ Stunder was phenomenal in what he did as a South African in Ireland. And then coming to Bath, pretty much the same. Ben Spencer, our captain, Charlie Hughes, Ben Obano, Tom Dunn. And then, you know, getting new players in, Finn Russell, Ollie Lawrence, Ted Hill, Alfie Barbary. So it's been a real enriching experience. And then different ways of coaching. I've been fortunate to coach with the likes of Felix Jones, Graham Rowntree, Steve Larkham, Lee Blackett, Richard Blaze, Neil Hatley. And then learning from different environments, Joe Schmidt and Andy Farrell in England has been, in Ireland, has been fantastic to me. Eddie and Steve in England. And then, you know, learning about the game. The game is ever evolving, ever moving. The game is not the same now as it was 6 months ago. And you know, then I think the most important bit is understanding why you live. And for me, I'm a rugby coach that absolutely loves the game and love people. So yeah, it's been an amazing experience, and I'm absolutely loving it.
I want to say, I mean, you and I have had this conversation before. I mean, you had to go overseas to, as you say, become a head coach and to sort of, for want of a better phrase, build up a rugby CV outside the country as well. In a way, it is, I suppose, the success that Rossi's had as well has been part of that. But it's almost that there's so little opportunities in South Africa. There's only 4 URC coaching jobs. There's only, you know, 1 national coaching job. Things like that. I suppose in a way, it's frustrating that you have to leave to come back, if I can put it that way. But I take it at some point you do want to come back, because I know you and I had this conversation.
I've had great opportunities in South Africa, at the Bulls, at the Stormers at one stage. But I believe life is about timing, and the timing wasn't quite right at the time. And I had this opportunity to go to Munster. Gareth Fitzgerald, the CEO at the time, met with me, and what a phenomenal man he was. I've learned so much from David Nusifora. So trying to get better and use opportunities that present itself. I'm South African. I'm currently coaching in England. I've signed another 5-year deal here till June 2030. But a week is a long time in rugby. I'm totally committed to what I'm doing here. Our family are going through amazing experiences. 3 kids at 3 young kids at school. My wife and I, when we met, said, you know, we want to see the world. We've traveled all over the world because of rugby. We're meeting so many different people. And you know, look, one day if the timing is right, love to coach in South Africa again. And who knows where the road goes. I think what I've learned in life is you've got to enjoy now. Enjoy every day of your life, because it's later than you think. And, you know, life will have its ups and downs. I think South African rugby is in a brilliant state. What Rossi has done in South African rugby is incredible. You know, the respect that the Springboks have in the Northern Hemisphere is great to see. And we've got incredible players in South Africa. Whether they play in England, Thomas Tatoe at Bath, you know, whether they play in Japan. The 4 franchises are highly respected. Obviously, I'm a Bulls man, but, you know, the Sharks have done really well. The Stormers have won the URC. I think the Lions are always punching above their weight. And you've just got to look at our school system in South Africa. Fortunate enough to watch Affies versus Boysie last season again, and you just get an appreciation again of how good of players we've got in our country. So who knows where the road goes, but I'd say South African rugby is in an incredible state, and a lot of credit to the leadership in South African rugby and at the franchises. They've done really, really well.
I know the Springbok brand has been on the up and up the last number of years. Do you think along with that there's been maybe a sort of a revaluation of what South Africa has to offer, especially in the coaching sphere? I mean, do you think that South African coaches are valued the way they ought to be internationally?
Yeah, I think, you know, Liam, rugby is about people, and I'd say South Africans are very honest, hardworking rugby people. Certainly everywhere that I've gone, there's a massive respect for South Africans, and I think South Africans respect other nations as well. You know, when some of my best rugby friends, someone like Fozzie Ian Foster in New Zealand, that's come a long time. Wig, Graham Rowntree from England in 2012, Stephen Larkham from Australia. You know, I've made rugby friends from all over the world. Simon Easterby, currently the Irish national coach. And I've just got to look at what South African coaches have done. Frank, who's done an amazing job in Glasgow, winning the URC away in Pretoria. You know, and I think what I've learned, sometimes you win with other people's teams, and sometimes your team wins with another coach. I think Frank has got to get a lot of credit for what he's put in place in Italy with all of their younger players a few years ago. So, you know, what Jacques currently doing in Leinster, you know, he just goes from one successful job to another. So there's so many good examples of players and coaches in the rugby world. But as I said before, that's why there's so much respect in the game. And, you know, obviously South Africa are the current double World Cup winning champions. But I'd say the respect's always been there on many different levels.
I want to delve a bit deeper, maybe just into coaching, the coaching psyche, because often, you know, from a fan's point of view, fans obviously live and die with their teams. They live and die with the results that their teams have. And we've seen, and I always use, when I have this conversation with other people, I always use Eddie Jones as an example, who everybody knows has been an extremely successful coach in his career. But he also went through stints like with the Reds in 2007 when you were part of that Bulls team that beat them with 90 points at Loftus. So sometimes the coaches might be top class. The environment might not be right. When you come into an environment like that, and I was just thinking also your time sometimes with the Springboks, not so much with Heineken, but with Alistair's team as such, we all know the results weren't there at that stage. Sometimes things just don't work. How do you handle that as a coach? And when you come into a place like Bath, who were literally bottom of the premiership when you got there, where do you start? I mean, I know you said you gave in a plan, but I mean, plans only work if people buy into them, and that's where you go take a step forward, I think.
Ren, I think it's such a good question. I think the first thing is you've got to have a vision, and I learned so much from Heineken about vision. And I'll give an example. 2011, I went to the Patriots with Franz Ludek and Heineken. It's after we've won our third Super Rugby. And the day I walked into the Patriots, I wrote in my journal a life-changing experience, because I saw this so much bigger in American sports. So I've learned so much about vision. The next bit is, you know, you've got to find the right fit. I believe that certain coaches are better fit for certain teams than others. I think you need to make sure you surround yourself with the best. An example in Bath is Rory Muddy, head of medical, Fran Leighton, head of operations, Alex Martin, head of physical performance, Sarah Jenner, head of nutrition, Dan Cooper, head of performance. Those were all handpicked. You need to make sure that you've got the right people. You've got to appoint coaches that not only challenge you, but can make players better. Lee Blackett has been fantastic for Bath Rugby. So is Richard Blaise. JP Ferreira and I come a long way now since Munster. You've got to make sure that you get buy-in from top to bottom, alignment. I'd say that's been the biggest learning that I've had from everywhere that I've coached, Bulls, Springboks, Munster, Bath. You've got to have alignment. And then hard work. You've got to understand that, you know, you'll win games, you'll lose games, but you've got to get better. And players, you've got to make players better, and you've got to make players believe. And I'd say a phrase that I have in my own head, never too high, never too low. You know, someone like Pep Guardiola is a great example. You know, Man City has won everything there's to win the last few years, and now they're going through a difficult spot, but they'll come out better again the other side. So keep learning, keep getting better. And I think purpose, you've got to understand why you're doing it, because you will win and you will lose. And for me, it's never been about me. It's about the club and about the others around you. And then we've got the saying at the club, start at zero. Whether you win or whether you lose the weekend, each Monday morning, we start the same way. I think in sports, sometimes when you win by a point, we think that everything is right. And when you lose by a point, everything is wrong. No, that is just the result. We understand that we're in the results business, but you're working with people. So you've got to make sure across a long time, you've got to just keep getting better. And that's why I believe continuity is so important. In rugby, that's what the All Blacks had in 2011 and 2015, alignment and continuity across world-class players, coaches. And that's what South Africa have now, a coach that's been there for a long time, players that have been there for over 100 test matches. And I think that's one of the big secrets in sports. You've got to have alignment and continuity. And, you know, that's what we're trying to create here at Bath.
You've now partly answered the question I wanted to ask, because when you leave a coaching legacy, it's obviously the player development and the improvement of player aspect to it. But then there's also, it's incumbent on you to win silverware, to win matches and to please the board, that kind of thing. How difficult is it to strike that balance, or do you have a clear mind of how you achieve that?
No, I think, Nem, it's firstly, you've got to make sure that you've got alignment with your board. I think that's the same from all over the world. And Owner Bruce Craig has been fantastic. He loves the city. He's bought the club many years ago and he's invested so much. So alignment with him is very important. And I think trust both ways. He trusts me to do my job. And then people. I can't overemphasize people enough. You've got to have the right people in the right positions. And then also change. You've got to make sure that you handle change well, because you can't keep doing things the same. Continuous improvement. You know, we speak about the Japanese so much and Kaizen, which means continuous improvement, but you've got to be able to manage change. I'll give a very simplistic example. The way the Edel battle has been refereed since November, some teams have adapted and some haven't. The shape of the game has totally changed. And I'll use an example of way back at the Bulls, 2007, when it was a magnificent team that won Super Rugby in the last minute against the Sharks. We had a clear competitive advantage in the kicking game and in the way that we played the game. In 2008, you know, I think back then it was called the ELVs came in, a lot of free kicks. You took them all away. It kind of took your kicking game away, and we didn't adapt well enough, and we ended 10th in that year. And then I remember Franz Ludeker, yeah, what a great man he is. Got us all together in George, and we know he sat there and reevaluate the way we do things. I remember Victor, Fourie, Brian, Vaynant, they all led the way, and we changed the way that we play the game, and that culminated in a Super Rugby final the next season, 61-17 against the Chiefs at Loftus. So you've got to be able to make sure that you change. And I think then also learn and learn your lessons. And I've been privileged to go through so many different experiences and been influenced by so many great people, both in South Africa and abroad, and try and apply it the best you can and then enjoy it because you can't take this game too seriously because you'll get punched in the face and you just got to stand up and go again, and you've got to absolutely love it. And yeah, I love rugby.
I think we're almost basically done, but I'm just going to leave you with my last question. You were part of a Bulls team with Heinicke that was quite well known for Heinicke's team talks. He used to, especially in those years, 2006, 2007, 2008, there, where, I mean, the players would tell us that they'd go, I mean, especially that Reds game, the famous story of them going in thinking they won't make it and coming out believing they will get 76 points win in that game. What type of team talks do you give? Are you a bit more technically focused, or are you like Heinicke in a way and try and motivate the guys like he did through those stories, uplifting stories?
Yeah, firstly, Heinicke was phenomenal in delivering a team talk. I remember Super Rugby Final 2007, the story about the umbrellas, about the farmers that prayed for rain, and the little boy said to his dad afterwards that he doesn't believe that these guys believe they will get rain. And he said, why? He said, because nobody brought an umbrella. So Heinicke was phenomenal in that sense. Learned so much from him. France was totally different. I can't speak highly enough of France, really. Alistair was totally different again. So, you know, I think, you know, I'm doing it in my own unique way. You've got to be adaptable to the team that you have. The Irish were very different to the South Africans. Sometimes you need emotion. Sometimes you need a technical point. Sometimes you need it to be player-led. Sometimes the best thing is to not say anything at all and just let it be. At Bath, it's a group that have grown a lot. So it's always so in stages. When I started here, it was very much coach-led. The way we've improved, the players that we signed, you've got to have the right, let's call it, message for the right day. And I'd say the staff and the player have developed that together. So my answer to that will be unique to me and unique to the circumstances on the day.
Just the last one for me as well, Jan. You mentioned it very briefly earlier about the shape of the game. You've been around long enough to provide us with an expert view, and you've seen different things around the world. Is there anything that you would alter in the game, whether it's in the laws or the way it's marketed and presented, to make rugby better? Is there anything that jumps out?
Well, I think rugby is in a great place. I think You know, most teams are trying to play positively. For me, rugby is a game for all shapes and sizes. I think we've got to keep it that way. We need to retain the scrum and the maul. Obviously, it's very unique to rugby. We need to retain that. We need to make sure that tall players, small players, fast players stay in the game. How good is Curtly Aronson, Cheslin Kolbe been for South Africa? The kicking game stays incredibly important because there's many different ways to play the game. I don't believe rugby is only about speed. And what I mean by that, just to make the game faster and faster in a higher ball in play doesn't mean that gives you a better product. So sometimes defense is beautiful. Sometimes playing against the wind, you've got to play a different way. And then, you know, for me, we've got to look after players in terms of concussion. But also, rugby is a collision sport. And I believe if we can sort out the card system so that we have clarity all around the world, what is a red card, what is a yellow card? But that's way above my pay grade. I'll leave that to the people that make those decisions. I guess my answer would be a game for all shapes and sizes. The Scots play differently to the Springboks. The All Blacks play differently to the Irish. The English play differently to the Japanese. So I think we've got a world game, and we've got to make sure that, you know, if Georgia only wants to scrum and maul, we've got to allow them to scrum and maul. If Ireland wants to play a continuity game similar to the Japanese, if you want to play a game that's power dominated like the French and the Springboks, and you want to pick a 7-1 bench, you should be allowed to, because that's all within the laws of the game. So, yeah, make sure we keep the respect and make sure that's a game for all shapes and sizes would be my view.
Keep it a game for the gladiators, basically.
Yeah, gladiator sport is, that's why rugby is in the way that it is. And I think the respect at the final whistle, doesn't matter who you play against with, there's always shake of the hands, you have a beer together afterwards, and we've got to look after this game because we've got an amazing game.
Johan, thanks for your time. It's you're 6 points clear at the top of the Premiership at the moment. So hopefully the next time we speak to you, there's another trophy in the cupboard. And good luck for all that. But yeah, and good luck, and hopefully we see you back here in the off-season in Pretoria.
No, thanks, Brendan. Thanks, Liam. From a Premiership point of view, look, there's so many good teams in the Premiership. 7 rounds to go, so we'll just take it week by week, and if we're good enough, we'll be in the playoffs. But yeah, the Premiership's a great competition. I've learned so much and I'm loving it, so who knows what might happen in the future. But thanks very much, and thank you for the contribution you guys are making to rugby. It's great to see and great to be involved.
Good luck, Jan, and thank you for sharing so generously.
Thanks, Liam.
Cheers.
Fantastic to catch up with a big rugby brain, Johan van Graan. And thanks to him again for sharing so generously. I mean, you can hear the passion in his voice.
Yeah, I must admit, I mean, I've obviously been in Pretoria since he joined the Bulls, and obviously through his dad, Baron van Graan, was the Bulls CEO. And I know he's had to fight his way to get where he has now. Didn't always have the environment maybe at Munster that could have helped, and they worked hard there. But it's good to see he's settled in at Bath and he's doing well there. And yeah, hopefully may it continue.
What is your abiding memory of, speaking of Baron van Graan, what is your abiding memory of when you used to call him as a journalist? That's the first thing he used to say to you.
No comment.
Okay, with me it was slightly different. That boiled down to the same thing, but he would say to me, Liam, what is no foot?
I remember phoning him once, and I was at Pretoria News at that stage, and there was crisis in the Bulls. It was really... And Baron was in the middle of it. And he always, I give him credit, no matter what the crisis, he always answered his phone, which is, you can't say that about a lot of rugby administrators. But, and then I ended up asking him probably around 40, 50 questions, which he gave me the same answer to everyone. No comment.
Let it be a lesson.
It was the most frustrating call. But yeah, he's been good for Bulls rugby and for SA rugby. He's been working behind the scenes at Sareo nowadays and helping with the player contracts and those sort of things. So Baron's still involved in the game, and it's good to see Johan doing so well.
Mm. Time to move on. Six Nations concluded last weekend, and in many ways, the last round of matches went according to script. France coming out on top, beating Scotland after a bit of a ropey first half. In fact, they could have been behind when the first half came to a conclusion, but they fought through and won the title. And in the end, a superb effort because three away matches for them in the championship. So they really had to, you know, fight tooth and nail to win it this time.
Yeah, they won in Dublin last week. Was it last week, 2 weeks? It always feels like a blur. But that was the big one for them. When they won there, they had the championship in their hands. So, yeah, I thought it was a very polished performance. From Scotland, I hate to be the cynic and I hate to be the one that bursts the bubble a lot of times, but wasn't that your typical Scottish performance? All fight and bravery for about 50 minutes and then fall apart at the end. They do that against all the big teams, unfortunately. When New Zealand play them, they do that against them. When we play them, they're good for 50, 60 minutes, and then we tend to power through. And a team with a power game always seems to do that to them.
And I think England fans will probably feel better about themselves than they did before the championship. But again, it's very difficult to put your finger on England and, you know, the stride that they've taken forward. I mean, they're a difficult team to sort of figure out.
Yeah, and I think you'll only really see when they play the Southern Hemisphere teams at the end of the year whether they've really taken that step forward. Because, yeah, Six Nations is so tribal and there's so much passion and history between those sides that when they do play France, there's an extra motivation. Very much like us playing the All Blacks. So I think when they stop playing the Southern Hemisphere teams at the end of the year, they're certainly a good side. They certainly look like they're building something. And they look like they know how they want to play, which is also ominous for other teams. But they still got a while to go, I think, before they catch the Springboks as well.
Yeah, you couldn't conclusively say that before the start of the championship. And now probably time to move on to the URC. Things will heat up in the next couple of weeks because there's some serious jockeying for a position.
Yeah, there is. And so it's a full round. We're back at URC in May. Most of the Northern Hemisphere sides are probably going to be without their Six Nations players. Some of them on the fringes probably get brought back, but most of them that had a lot of game time in the Six Nations will be rested. I think it brings me maybe to the first one. Let's look at the South African teams instead of being in Pretoria. I actually wrote something about this morning just for Supersport where I said we do need a shake-up in the fixture list because this is the third consecutive year or fourth consecutive year that Leinster have come to South Africa with a second-string team. Now, there's a caveat to that. They are a hell of a lot of points ahead on the log, so they have the luxury of doing that. It's just every single time this either falls just before the Champions Cup games or just after Six Nations, and sometimes basically in a bit of both. And no one's blaming Leinster for prioritizing what's important to them. It's just, you know, this weekend they're playing the Bulls, who are third. Next weekend they're playing the Sharks, who are fourth. First, 1 versus 3 and 1 versus 4 should be blockbuster games. And yeah, I just feel the competition's probably robbing itself of big matches like that when they schedule this. Now, just to finish that off, they've gone a long way in helping South African teams with the travel. And I know there's limitations on because you have to fit a certain amount of games in a certain time period. And I don't want to be the guy who works that out. But somewhere, I think something has to be changed a little bit for that.
Look, I mean, there are so many moving parts to the URC. It is very difficult to tick every box. So, yeah, you know, I mean, if they win one of those two games away or if they win both, they're going to go home smiling with their second.
Yeah, the caveat of that is Leinster's second team is probably better than the bottom eight teams in the URC. So they do have a chance. And with players like Arkie Sneyman and Slimani and Jordy Barrett, yeah, they've got some good international players, non Northern Hemisphere players that play non-Six Nation tied players. Because Slimani is obviously French, but yeah, it's just, they those type of players will help them in a game like that, especially with the youngsters around there. They've got lots of talent in Leinster, good system. So they're going to be a tricky one for the Bulls this weekend.
Your prediction?
I think the Bulls will still take it, but I think it'll be a high-scoring game. Probably both teams get a bonus point, so like 43-28 or something like that. To me, it all depends on the Bulls' selection. If they get Cameron Hahn-Hoffman. Well, the Bulls have been used to playing in rain the last couple of weeks.
Looking outside now, Bryn.
The weirdest thing, that game against the Stormers, I was after that one, and the game against the Stormers, it was that pelting rain. The game was delayed, everything. Half an hour after the game, after the game, it was clear skies. It was the weirdest thing. Anyway, but yeah, moving on. The Sharks have a relatively easier game against Zebre, although they are the giant killers of the competition.
Wow.
You know,
they have no excuse whatsoever to slip up at home. Cardiff Lions could be an interesting one.
It could. I think this is one that really the Lions, they've been bolstered by the return of a lot of their players. Henko, you know, Kuen Horn, Rion, what's his name? Fenter. Those guys are going to make a huge difference. JC Pretorius is back for them as well. So they can pick a full squad. And Cardiff, yeah, Welsh rugby is really in the doldrums. I know we say it every week, but after that loss against England, the record loss, Matt Sheerat is going to come back to Cardiff now and he's back at his club. How does that affect the players? I just think there's a real opportunity here for the Lions to strike and to get some valuable points, because if they can win this one, it really sets them up for a top eight play.
Absolutely. I mean, it's also with they've had a little bit of a rest, so it's a game that they clearly have prepared for properly. And I suppose the same goes for the Stormers.
Yeah, I think them getting Damian Willemse back and Sasha Mangomazulu back, Feinberg Mangomazulu, yeah, that makes a big difference to them as well. They seem to be playing with confidence after they beat the Bulls. There's everything for them to play for. They seem to have momentum now, a couple of wins. So for me, yeah, they're really in a good spot. They're also going to have a good opportunity. And we could be in a situation in a couple of weeks' time with four South African teams in the top eight, and that would be wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. But there again, I mean, the Lions will need to win these games, these ones away from home, where they've maybe tripped up in the past. But they have an opportunity, so
yeah,
they have a real chance.
Well, I'm going to call all South African wins for all four teams this week. I think I'm being a bullish on that one.
I'm not going to disagree with you. This is a proper opportunity for a clean sweep.
Maybe we should just have a quick look at the other games. I'll go through them quickly. Glasgow Munster should be an interesting one, especially at the Scots.
I'll go Glasgow.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see the teams they picked, because how many of those, both teams lost a lot of international players for the Six Nations. So depending on the teams they picked, but that should be a crack of a Friday night game either way. Also, obviously Friday is also Cardiff Lions. That's a big one. We have Lions for that one. Saturday, Sharks Zebre, and then followed at this, just after that, Benetton Edinburgh, which is an intriguing game.
Yeah. Yeah, Edinburgh's been a difficult one, and I suppose Benetton as well, in terms of gauging form this season. So, if you're going to call it draw, this is not the worst one.
No, if not, I'd say probably Benetton probably shaded it just because they had her. And again, it depends. Both sides lost players to Six Nations, how many of them will be back, especially in Benetton's case, because that's basically the entire team. So, yeah, this is at 5 o'clock, same as the Scarlet Stormers. I can't see the Stormers losing that one now. I think the Welsh teams are going to drop down as well now. Dragons Ulster, 16th against 14th. Not a game I'm getting excited about, but I would probably back Ulster away from them.
I was about to say, are you going to stay up? But I see it's a 7:15 game. So
it is. I read it wrong. Sorry. I'm getting too old for the 10:30 games nowadays, Dan.
Yeah. Unless it's a test.
Yeah. No.
Well, I think that's it for this week.
Is
there one more? Apologies.
Ospreys Connacht, yeah. So, which is another interesting one, but I'd probably back the Irish side there as well. So, I think when you talk about game times, at least it's not those Pampas and what's it, Jaguares games that used to come at 12:30 at night, 1:00 in the morning. I mean, it could be that. So, we've got to count your blessings. It's been a good week.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a great week on the rugby field this weekend. If you're going away, drive safely. It's a long weekend for a lot of people, and enjoy the time with friends and family.
Stay safe, everyone. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.